Esports podcast, noun. A 2-hour-long video full of banter and nonsense where the guests are only introduced halfway through and the outro makes you think your internet's died. Huh.
When you went to Valorant, as you say, one of the early gigs was you coached the T1 squad that basically was most of the formerly banned Ivy Power players, like Skanoodle. I mean, he wasn't banned, but he was in the team. Obviously, Dazed, Swag, a whole bunch of these players at EZK that everyone remembers. Right, you set it up there, because I was going to ask a question like that, which is, I actually wondered what the dynamic was with Fraud coaching Dazed, because I love Dazed, but one of the things I do love about him is he does have a big ego, and he is one of those guys who sort of thinks he invented Counter-Strike, if you know what I mean. So what was that dynamic like? Sounds like maybe a bit of friction.
My favorite thing is guys that think that way that never won jack shit. It's like the okay. Most hilarious thing to me. But anyways, you know, it's like, if you want to talk about some sort of secret sauce, come to the guy that's won multiple times, not the guy who stumbled upon once or, you know, was part of like the biggest fluke in history. You know, like, you win one time, it's a fluke. You win multiple times, you got something going, right? There's only been one major in CSGO, and that's damn fluke. Everyone knows that. Anyways, going back to that, you know, before in T1, when the game first came out with Valorant, with Brax and stuff like that, like, I had a lot of say in the strategies, coming up with some of these cool ideas, combining some ultimates and things like that. And we just really needed like a good IGL. And there was teams like 100 Thieves that were doing like a monopoly on IGLs, like Steel, Nitro, all these guys were like, damn it, man. Like, that's the only one is Days. And I told Brax, I was like, this is the end of me. I hope you know this, right? Like, before he joined, I kind of had this conversation with him in LA. I was like, this is the end of me. I hope you know this, right? And we were just kind of joking. I was like, yeah, when Days gets a chance, he's going to get rid of my ass. It's just a fact. And I realized a lot of that early on, because I'm really involved in that. And I also liked, I'm like a pretty understanding coach in that sense, that like, if I have an IGL, like last year where Sadak, he's a like a master for IGL, I can focus more on like the tactic side. But then you have someone like Days who wants to be a part of everything, no problem. I could be more of like the managerial kind of coach where I can just book the scrims and all that stuff, but I just don't really like that too much. But you know, someone like Days, he didn't really let me get my two cents in when it came to some strategies. It was always his way, and he's a CS guy, and he wanted to implement his CS mindset in Valorant. I'm like, buddy, you can't do that. Like, you have to factor in abilities, these blue walls, like just cooldowns on abilities. Like, there are certain elements of Valorant that make the game completely different than what Counter-Strike would. And he did not, he felt like he can still play CS in Valorant. And I was like, this is not how it works, guy. And we just butted heads that way all the time, because he wanted to slow default and play like Na'Vi, like exec with 15 seconds. I'm like, you don't understand, bud. Right. There's like, everyone has mollies, everyone has smokes. There's different, there's like a, what if you're playing against a Raze that has two satchels, a grenade, an ultimate? Like, you're, and then what happens if there's also a Sova ult? Like, you, if you're not exec, if you're not planting the, like, Na'Vi, instead of being the last 10 seconds, if they have Raze, Sova, and this, Na'Vi now becomes 30 seconds, because you have to start clicking bomb, baiting utility, and then you can leave yourself with the last 10 seconds to play. And it's like, he didn't understand these concepts, and we were just getting, and my thing too is like, we're getting murdered. Like, we were like, T1 was actually a really good team when the game first came out, and that's when I was like really having my footprint on stuff. And then once we got Days, we progressively got worse and worse and worse. I'm like, guys, am I the only one that's going crazy here and thinking that like we just keep losing because this system is not working? And eventually I got my way, which was to do our stuff the way I wanted to. And that was the second qualifier for First Strike. We ended up winning that qualifier, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to get fired for sure, because they now know that my way is a lot more effective. Days is not going to accept this. So this is my ass for sure. And, you know, it was right after. And as, you know, both teams and or like both parties, like myself as well as T1, had those regrets that we ended up parting ways. I think that they didn't, you know, like the guys at T1, they didn't realize that I had their best interest in mind, not mine. I wanted to win, just like they wanted to win. Whereas guys like Days has hit his own things. You know, he felt like he can cure Skadoodle. You know, it's like you can't change, like you can't cure a guy who is like a permanent opper in CS and refuses to op in Valorant.
Oh, right. It's a choice. Right. Okay.
Yeah. He did not want to op. He did not want to play Jett. It's like, how the hell are we going to compete with guys like Wardell and other people and Ye who are like, you know, prime oppers in their prime as young guys that embrace the new agent, the agent that's the most efficient with an op? It's like, of course we're destined to lose. And it's like, no, but if you put him on whatever agent and you put him in and you give him the op and I control him, that I'll get him. I'm like, like, what the hell is this? Like, you act like his system was like the most perfect thing ever, and it just proved time and time again in his many variations that is just a complete failure. And, you know, he says, like, give me like 2-3 months to make a team and to put my strategies in place. Like, who the hell has 2 or 3 months to like show some results? This is a performance-based business. You know, you need to show results immediately or promise immediately, not give me 2 or 3 months to like maybe see something. It don't work that way. And while he has that mindset of he could probably be a really good coach, at the same time, you have some coaches in the business now that they feel like their way is better than anyone's way, and those guys don't have success because at the end of the day, we're not players. We're just supposed to be here to try and help and guide and inspire our players and be adaptable to what we need and flexible. Like I said, if certain teams, certain moments, I'm the manager, coach, no problem. Other teams, other things, I'm like the analyst kind of coach. Perfect. But in order to be a good coach, you have to be able to do a little bit of everything. You can't just specialize in one thing.
There would probably be no Loud and all the success later if you didn't then basically go back and grind and work with this Pioneers team and have 2 years where you're just kind of in the wilderness. When that happens, like, are you able to handle like the setback? Did you ever think like, am I just going to be gatekept out the scene? Like, what was the vibe for those years?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of felt a little bit like I may get gatekept, or like maybe just the perception that I had from being left out of T1. The thing is that, I guess time and time again, it's kind of proven that whatever situation I was in, and maybe I got left out of or whatever, wasn't fault of my own there. Like, a lot of these people, like, the success, like, T1 hasn't been able to replicate that success and other teams like that, you know? So, yeah, I feel like the impact that I could have had in the game, like, was pretty big. I just was never really given that opportunity. And being kind of, like, after T1, I went on a team, and that team, like, they couldn't raise money right when COVID hit, and boom, 2 months later, a new team. Then the Pioneers, like, that was a cool team. We just didn't make it to Challengers, and we got left out, but we were probably never going to make it because we were just such a small org in comparison to some of the Giants. But once the league announced that half of the league is South American, I'm like, oh shit, baby, I'm back, because I speak Spanish, no problem. And over time, I was able to kind of, like, just even dealing with Kogu and stuff like that back in the day and being on an all-star team and stuff, like, way back in the day, I was like, damn, I kind of understand you guys. Like, you better watch out. Don't ghost in front of me. I can understand. And, yeah, I was able to pick up Portuguese pretty quick. It has a lot of similarities to Spanish. It took me, like, maybe 2-3 months to, like, get a decent grasp of Portuguese and understanding everything that's said and speaking it with a little bit more confidence. And then as time goes on, I speak less and less what they call Portuñol, which is like a mix of Spanish and Portuguese. I'm trying to speak more Portuguese purely, which kind of is making my Spanish suffer, which, you know, my poor grandparents and stepmom, they're like, what the hell is this kid saying now? But yeah, I am pretty fluent in Portuguese. It's actually pretty cool. Being able to, that's why I was like, half the league we'll probably want to go after a coach that's in their region or someone like me that speaks their language or can't speak their language. So I was automatically like, I got to find a way back. Anyone give me a chance. And basically the coach of Loud at the time, Bazooka, me and him kind of knew each other. I guess going into that story, Kogu was coming by to Florida, where I was living, to stay at Bazooka's family house to like play games and like play ESEA or whatever when he was making a comeback. I was like, oh shit, let me go on by and hang out with you for a little while. And that's when I became friends with Bazooka when he was trying to be a player. And we just kind of maintained that relationship. And he was the one that kind of called me to, you know, give them some of that advice out loud, and the rest is kind of history there.
One thing I just want to ask before the Loud period is, there is one player when you're in this Pioneers team I want to ask about because people will know him. It was JC Starney. Obviously, he then later went on to be in Immortals, etc. Give me some thoughts on this guy.
I always thought JC Starney was like a very talented player. He was someone that he kind of had he was like an IGL that liked to do a lot of his things, but he also took some inspiration from me. But he was probably one of the easiest IGLs to work with because he had like such a big skill set. Like, he didn't really need me. Like, when I saw someone like him, he was the guy that I was like, you tell me what you need from me, because it seems like you have a good head on your shoulders in the game. It seems like you're very professional. He's very talented as well, knew how to manage the guys. So he made my job easier, where I could just focus on filling in the gaps where I felt like I needed to be. Didn't really, it's not, there wasn't a need for me to be so strategically crazy. You know, I kind of helped where I could, but he was someone that I was like, damn, this kid has a lot of potential, you know? And we like that Pioneers team, we had a lot of pretty good players. Like we had Thief, we had Odorous, and some of these guys, like they were really, really good. We were just on the outside looking in of maybe what teams perceived as buy. And we would finish top 8, top 10 in some of these qualifiers. It just was not good enough at the time, but it was enough to beat a lot of these teams. Like, we beat Ghost a couple times, which had the coaches like Kaplan, players like Nismo and stuff like that. So we were always a pretty good team, and I felt like our skill was a huge driver of that, but also JC Stani and being able to be a good IGL as well as being a super talented player. Like, he's done some crazy individual stuff in the game. He's got a really, really high level of talent. It makes a difference, man. Like, especially when you're seeing guys like John QT now. These are guys that they're not your traditional IGLs. Like, they're hard fragging IGLs, and for me, that's kind of the new wave. It's just very hard to have IGLs that maybe aren't putting up those numbers, and while they can win, it's just not as consistent as some of these guys who just shoot you down, you know?
As you said there, maybe it wasn't actually known to the public, but it wasn't just the 2023 Loud that Frod was involved with. You got to be involved around the time when obviously the team broke out by winning champions in 2022. Can you give me some sense of like, what were you able to contribute, or what was it even like to join this team?
Yeah. So that was like a couple months after the Pioneers thing had kind of finished up, and I was like, damn, what am I gonna do? I started, like, you know, consulting some agencies. I was maybe gonna like go down the route of being like an agent, staying in the esports scene, or like just mentoring, whatever. And then Bazooka kind of hit me up and let me know that, like, if I would be interested in doing some analytical work and stuff like that with them, just for champions. They couldn't offer me anything, like no salary. They couldn't like there was no way that Loud could pay me or something like that. So I was like, yeah, don't worry, man. Like, I think this would be good for me to kind of give my imprint on that. So he started sending me some of their practice VODs, like the 2-3 weeks leading up to champions. And I started correcting some mistakes and writing some notes down, not really sharing with them too much, just a slight bit. And then once we started getting into champions and seeing who their opponents were, they kind of basically told me like their path along the tournament. They're like, you don't really have to focus on a team like Zeta Division, because we have a really good read on them, but every other team, we need everything. Like, we need you to break down Pistol, Eco, Bonus, First Gun Round. And then I started adding my stuff too, like what type of strat is called after a timeout, things like that. So I started adding like my own level of like anti-stratting, if you will. And I would like take photos of the radar, write down how the round broke down, where certain players' heat maps were. So I was basically breaking down every side of every map for every opponent that we faced. So whoever the next opponent was, I broke down at least one VOD and found tendencies of each side, each map, all that. Then I also provided them with what pistol rounds to do. Like, I gave them like 4 or 5 different pistols per map, per side, per matchup. You know, it's like they're like, hey, Fraud, we're ideally going to play these 4 or 5 maps. Bring us new pistols. Boom. Give them 2-3 different options on each one. And that was like a meme for Loud that these guys never won pistols until, you know, I was brought on board. So I kind of entered, like, I gave them a lot of focus on that. And I was that, you know, I was kind of an ass in some of these like write-ups that I would do, because I didn't really know any of these guys. I honestly thought I was talking to my friend, not talking to the team in general. And I was like, you don't have to show this to these guys, you know what I'm saying? Like, but I was like, look, if you don't play this way, you're gonna lose. If you don't play Optic this way, you're gonna lose. And once you beat Optic, if you don't change to this way, this is what they're gonna do, this is what you gotta do, you're gonna lose. Like, I was very upfront with them when they were playing against teams that would slow default, like the European teams. Like, I'm like, you guys just don't know how to play against teams like Na'Vi, that Na'Vi style, that like you're slow execing, you're slow defaulting, and boom. And I think that was probably like the biggest things that I was able to contribute, is not only just the level of anti-stratting for the other team, but how we are going to play, how we should improve our concepts, and also just a different level of strategy. Like I said, like the pistol rounds, my unique view on them, which are like it's random. The way I inspire myself to do a pistol, but a lot of it could be based on like CS, which is like stacking 4-1, 3-2s, or it could be a lot of it on combining abilities to do like a full retake and stuff like that. It really all depends, and I give a lot of options for it, and they ended up using everything. And I was like, holy shit, I didn't think these guys were gonna use anything. And they ended up winning champions, and I was like, damn, you know, like only Days listened to half, a third of what I said. We could have maybe won a damn match with him. But yeah, it was super cool to see these guys that didn't even speak my language, had really no idea. Maybe I think only Bazooka and one player had any idea who I maybe was, like Pankaj.
Oh, really?
Maybe.
Okay.
None of them knew anything about me. Like Aspas, Les, Sadak, they had no idea who the hell. They're like, yeah, there's just this random guy from America that wants to help us out. So I was like, okay, sounds good. And I think that they were able to slowly over time get a feel for that. I think when they dealt with me last year, don't believe what you see out there. You know, me and Loud had a really good relationship. The Oregon also, a lot of the players too. So, and I do speak the language, even though, you know, some people say I don't. There's not a single person I've spoken Portuguese that has told me they don't understand me. And this goes from, like, not only gamers, but ladies who clean.
All right.
Restaurants. Like, we went to Fogo de Chão the other day, and the waiter was joking with my Brazilian players that I speak better Portuguese than them. And he was joking, but, you know, it's like, there's not a single soul that doesn't understand me. Every single time I speak to someone who's Portuguese, like, I always get a big compliment. They're like, damn, you really know how to speak the language, and like, congratulations, man. Like, you're speaking another language, and you're trying to speak our language, you know, not just so. And that was also like a personal goal of mine. It was always, I always wanted to find a way to learn a third language, and this is like a really smooth transition.
When you actually got to take over fully last year, and you were the coach of Loud, obviously one of the other things that was interesting was a lot of people initially didn't know how good the team would be, because obviously some of their names went and got bought out by Sentinels. And I'm sure some people thought, like, all right, now they'll just be not as good, or they have to rework it. What did you think of the roster you got given?
I had no say in the actual construction of that roster. I was just like, hey, you're going to be our coach. And I was like, okay, perfect. Since I don't know anyone, you put that together. And I was like, let's go and just get super talented, dedicated players, and let's make it happen. It had its challenges. You know, guys like Kawan, he's just like an uber talent. But his transition was very smooth because we picked him up for the role that he joined our team with. Someone like Tweez, he was a duelist that was forced into playing more of a controller role, different agent. So we had to kind of explain to him how to play that way different, how to play the roles and stuff like that. So there was a lot of little things, but it really was all about us coming together and explaining to each other, like explaining to them how to play, things like that. But everybody was really like receptive. I think a lot of the things that we did, we were trying to innovate. Like, since we were starting from scratch, a lot of my mindset, like even thinking about like the Harbor Viper comp that I ended up coming up with, it was all revolved around Aspas and him being a Jet, because he did not have limitations on other agents. He was just so damn good with Jet that I was like, we have to have him around it. We have to create a composition around it. And we ended up doing that. That was our inspiration. Guys like Tweez, so I was like, well, Harbor is a very unique and weird agent, but since you have no idea how to play this kind of role anyways, might as well just learn the agent and do the thing. So didn't really have that much challenges, you know. Loud was a big team, big organization, especially for those guys in Brazil. Like, I think a lot of these kids, when they get that opportunity, they're gonna just go all out. You know, it's like the big, it's like the Yankees calling you up. You know, it's like you're not just gonna think that you made it just because you joined the team. Like, you, every day is another day to prove yourself. And I think that the kind of players that they picked up were perfect for that mindset, because they retained a core of champions that wanted to win again, and they picked up players who wanted that exact same success, and we're not just gonna think that they got it just by joining. They wanted to earn it day by day.
What was it like to work with Aspas? People obviously know he's one of the bigger names now, obviously with all the success as well and the winning. Who is this guy?
He's a freak. He's a freak in nature. He's like, always say he's like a blessed player. You know, he reminds me a lot of myself in that sense. It's like people, for whatever reason, miss all their bullets in his back. You know,
right.
What I'm saying? Like, he's the kind of guy that he jumps and a random bullet will find a head. You know, he kind of has that sort of level of luck, and just dealing with him, super smart guy, you know, kind of has that mindset of like Ye, for example, where they're extremely intelligent and they don't speak as much. But if you can find a way to draw that genius out, you know that you're onto something. And I think that over time, he was able to respect me as a person, not for who I am, fraud or whatever. Maybe he still doesn't know to this day a lot of that information about me. But we're really good friends to this day because we speak the same language when it comes to how we approach the game. So it was super easy to work with someone like him. And, you know, seeing stuff like just dealing with we have like psychologists and stuff like that nowadays, you know, guys like him can like get into that flow state and just autopilot headshot everything, and he can get into that kind of flow state mindset often, very frequent, all that stuff. So he's just a freak in the best way, you know what I'm saying? Like and that's kind of part of a little bit I felt about myself when I played, because I knew I was a very talented player, but I just had that little element of luck sometimes, that little, you know, that luck, yeah, the luck on my side. Just I shoot a random bullet through a wall and someone dies, right? Like, he's got that level, but like times 10. Just the best, one of the best talented. Ever since that, I would say Aspas is number two. And if not, I would put them equally up there. Haven't seen Aspas dominate different games, but we did in the offseason. Play a little bit of CS and stuff like that, and the guy's like dropping 30 kills in CS.
Okay.
Like, what the hell? Like, he's just a talent. This guy will headshot. He doesn't know how to like ask for a flashback.
Sure.
But he will drop 30. It's very simple.
What about, obviously, the first tournament was the lock-in, and even though like they actually sort of downplayed it, they were like, it's just an exhibition tournament, guys. It's just to test the roster out. It doesn't count for VCT. Everyone knows the second everyone arrived, it's on. It's a massive international tournament. And it almost was like the perfect like movie start for you, because it's in Brazil. You've joined Loud. Like I said, some people are like, is Loud even going to be good? Haven't Sentinels taken their players, you know? And then you guys were not only one game from winning, that game itself is like fucking epic, isn't it? It's like, it goes all the way to you. So it must have been an amazing experience. Give me some thoughts on this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first tournament in Sao Paulo or in Brazil since one of those like Pan American games way back in the day where I lost to Fallen. I think when I ranked for 3D. But anyways, we boot camped for that tournament. You know, we flew to Spain and we boot camped there for a few weeks, and not really to try and win lock in. We obviously want to do well. It's more to test our theories and our the compositions that I was coming up with and stuff like that. So that we flew into that tournament. You know, it wasn't like even though it was in our home, all the guys literally lived in Sao Paulo. We flew in for that tournament. We treated that as if it was a big tournament, and it was an incredible experience playing. I mean, these new formats are something else. You know, like now we're number one in Americas without even playing a game. You know, sure. Never even seen something like this before. That's why sure. I was kind of memeing. I was like, whatever. But anyways, lock-in is like single elimination tournament with 32 teams traveling from all over the freaking world. Like, this is quite unique. But at the same time, we want to win. And maybe some people, even like Sadak, didn't even think that we were going to win one match. I was like, the talent that we have on this team, there's no way that we just win one game, you know? And I think it started getting more real for us. Like, Loud is by far the biggest team there, and it's like the amount of fans that we had, the chance that we would get, like it was such a surreal experience. It was something that I've never really experienced until maybe like when I went to China back in the day, and the fandom there was out of this world. The Brazilian fans are crazy like that, like, and they're super passionate about their players and their teams. So it was something completely unique to witness, but then also be on the receiving end of that love. And for me, it was really, really nice. And like, the Brazilian culture is very similar to my Hispanic and Cuban culture, and just that kind of mindset and stuff. So I think we were able to hit it off really well, and it was one of the best experiences I ever had. And I think I was maybe speaking and understanding Portuguese like maybe 3-4 months at the time from then on. So I was starting to, that was where I really got integrated into a lot of those like real life things, not just like the gaming side of Portuguese. It was just conversing with drivers, ordering food, just the day-to-day stuff. And I think that was what I really needed, because early on my languages was kind of getting more limited to just the game rather than the actual conversation aspect of it. You know, I really just had to prioritize what I learned first, and I focused on the strats in the game, and I just consumed everything in Portuguese after that. Like, I listened to the Portuguese broadcast every chance I get. I listen to Guales instead of like the regular broadcast, just to make sure that I'm getting that kind of thing wired into my head of listening to it, because man, it's a lot of languages. It's just like a spaghetti mix of things going on sometimes, you know.
What about if I ask about Sadak? Obviously, he had the unique aspect because he's Argentinian. You can just speak Spanish to him. Like, you've got that connection as well. And then I wanted to know, you teased it earlier, who is this guy's in-game leader? I mean, look, his resume obviously speaks for itself, right?
Yeah, he Sadak is came from like the Paladins game, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and he was really good there and competed in world championships and stuff like that. And he was just He's an Argentinian guy, and he actually speaks really good English too. So I think a
All
lot of the
right.
times that we theory crafted, he's like a really big inventor of some of these ideas, and we kind of come to a consensus because I kind of bring him down and we put our ideas together and come up with like some magic together. We'd usually always do that in English, but at the same time, like, this is the kind of guy who has the ability and the talent to do absolutely everything. But he's also a guy that freely admits he doesn't have all the time in the world to compete, you know, because he understands he's realistic with stuff. So I think my biggest job and what I told him from day one last year was my job will be to extend your career. So you give me every bit of your job that you don't want to do or that makes you pissed or bored or whatever, and I'll take it. So I was really focused on everything, but not fully doing everything, if that makes sense. Like, when it came to strategy wise, I would be the one that probably did the majority of that, like suggesting and bringing that like element of like, here are our options, here are things. But I kind of explained to the guys, and this is one of my proudest things, was I think by the end of Champions in 2023 last year, we started doing all the things together, like the reviews, the anti-strats, the things like that. It became a team thing, not just a me and Sadak thing or a me thing. And that was my goal from day one, because maybe it ended up becoming like a bit of my downfall because I kind of made them independent enough that they didn't necessarily
All
need me to
right,
that
sure.
extent. But the reality is that that's how I grew up, where all of the, you know, we didn't have a coach. So we all had to share the jobs for the
Sure.
duties of a coach. And I don't think it's fair that a coach and an IGR are the ones that are busting their ass all day and night long, solely doing the strategies, and then the players, some of the players just wake up and read and go. Because I'm not saying that that's a bad way. I'm just saying that I don't like it that way because I feel like it's more efficient if we all do this one time and we all learn and we're all on the same page, rather than having to bit by bit explain that, have everyone get on the same page as us. So that was something, and you know, I just felt like that was what we needed to do. We don't have that much time. We have like maybe, you know, one day, 24 hours to prepare for another team. I don't have time to do my magic. I think that actually that was why I was able to be such a big help for Loud at Champions, is because I wasn't there with them. I was in Miami and they were in Turkey. So the time difference was actually like a big benefit to us, where they would give me, like, the tournament would be over and Bazooka would tell me, hey, I need this, 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 and this. And I'd be like, hey, man, you know, have a good night. It'll be there when you wake up. And that was starting my day. So it was like he would go to bed, get his rest, and when he woke up, all the stuff was in his inbox. So I think that that kind of plays an element to it too, where you have to find a way to prepare for an opponent when you don't have the right time or the right amount of the best situation for it. And if we don't have guys that are doing analytics on the fly like that, then we're going to have to do this all as a team. Let's do this one time, make it efficient, call it a night, and let's get ready for the next team. We have to have like different systems where how we boot camp, how we practice on a day to day, and how we treat tournaments. And now tournaments are so different here in Riot, where we can have a single limb every day, or we can have a week by week season, kind of like WEG back in the day. So it's like you now have to have different ways of how you prepare in different formats. If it's like a regular tournament, then you have to go the way I told you about. But if you're doing now the regular season, where we have 1 week to prepare, we have so many different ideas and ways that we can approach our week, and we can mold it week by week because we only have to focus on one game per week.
When you guys were in the VCT Americas and you had that run where you were very dominant, you won, you beat all the best teams, beat NRG in the final, beat EG, who later on went on to be good, etc. I remember this was when I was doing my talk show. I had Sean Gares on actually as an episode, I think coming into Tokyo. And he actually was saying, like, he thought like Loud was just going to be the best team in the world, mate. Like, he was saying, like, stuff like the Harbor Breach thing talked about earlier. Like, he said literally they've got like unique strategies, they've got the meta stuff down, they've got maps that people can't play against them. Like, what did you think at this time? Was it, were you starting to cook at this point?
Yeah, from day one that I joined, I was basically starting to cook that, because a lot of what I ended up doing for the team was just that. Like, every match that we played since we had a week to prepare, the way that it worked was the day after a match we had off. I never took a day off, because that day off was my day to prepare all of the anti-strats, kind of like I was doing for last year. So let's say we played on a Sunday. Monday the guys had off. Well, Monday I spent my whole day breaking down every side of every map for our opponent. Every side of every map. So like five, six maps. Every side, every map had a breakdown. And then from there on out, we kind of already started doing our mock drafts, how the pick and bans would be. We'd cater our practice that week towards how we wanted to do. And then the day before the match, we would go over a lot of the pistols, anti-ecos, and different things that I wanted to do, which I had already usually prepared that off day. And I felt like that was something that Slot could do easily. He probably could do that in his sleep if he wanted to, but that was something that he knew that I was good at, and he let me do it to kind of alleviate a lot of the stresses potentially from him. And I enjoyed it. It was something that, you know, when I was working with Bazooka and Champions, and now I'm continuing to work with him now here in MIBR, it's kind of like that system that we have in place where, you know, we can do a little bit of everything. It's just, what do you need from me? And I'll jump right on it. I don't say I do the same thing every day, but I would focus on something different as much as they need me to, and just be adaptable to what they need. And like I said, for Loud last year, that was something that I wanted to take that burden off of his shoulders to allow, like, to help extend his career if I could. So I took a lot of pride in just our preparation for the games and our game plans for the games, anti-strats, all that stuff, and just making sure everything was exactly how they, you know, they wanted it.
Obviously, when you guys went to the Tokyo Masters, people were very shocked because you guys just got bounced straight out of the playoffs. But I will say, if you look back now, it doesn't even look as bad on paper as it seemed. Like, one, turned out Evil Genius was pretty good. I think everyone knows that now. And then your first round opponent. And then the lower bracket one, even that one, like, mate, when I had Sean Gaze on, he was raving about those EDG players. He was like yeah. he said some of them have that Kankan guy. He said he's like probably the best mechanical player in the fucking game. Like, you kind of almost got ambushed a bit at this tournament, right?
Hey, it was a lot of things. You know, we won Americas. We had a week off because we really didn't have any time off, and then we went straight to Tokyo. The practice rooms and the internet were great. The internet was just terrible, so we weren't actually able to get practice. And this was a time that one of the players wanted to start changing up a lot of compositions, and I wasn't in agreement with that. But okay, like I'm not going to be a hater of innovation, right? But at the same time, I felt like why we were good at the Harbor Viper stuff was because we spent so much time practicing it, and we even boot camp for it to make sure that all these things and tested this style of play in different regions. I felt like, you know, having 1 week of practice while we're at Tokyo is not a good enough compilation of data to see if what we're looking at is going to be good or not. And, you know, with no practice, the situation not being so ideal, we were never going to be able to see if these comps were going to be good or not until we stepped on stage. And I just think it wasn't really what we should have done at the time. Especially because the thought process behind the compositions was putting Aspas in a situation to make him succeed and do good. And I thought that some of the new compositions did not have that in mind, just having him play different agents that did not necessarily make sense just because it was perceived as meta. I think what a lot of people don't understand is when you make meta, you make it, man. You don't copy it. You don't take inspiration from another team like that. You can't just sit there and say, oh, Cloud9 plays this agent, so it's good. It's like, at that point, you're copying. You're not innovating. If you want to innovate, you focus on yourself first. And at the end of the day, maybe it might copy some other team's composition, but you're at least putting yourself in there first. And that's how you're trying to invent and trying to cater. But if you're just taking something from someone else and saying like, oh, this agent's played on this map, it's good. Like, at that point, you're just like the lazy man, just copy pasting. You're not the one that's writing the book. You get me? So I think that that's where it kind of bled in a little bit more to Champs too. But in between Tokyo and Champions, we probably had a good month, and we had that 2 or 3 week LA boot camp where we were able to really practice some stuff, and we kind of came to some compositions that were a little bit better. But I wasn't, again, I was really more about like, man, this Harbor Viper stuff is really like what we're good at, what we spent so much time on. And it's such a unique composition that if you don't play against it, you don't understand how to play against it.
Right.
So, and I had this mindset, and I refused to scrim against any franchise teams. I had like a perma ban. Like, I don't want to play any franchise team. I don't want to give you any idea what it's like to play against my team and my composition until it's live on stage. So we refused to scrim any franchise team and give them any idea of what we were doing. So I wanted to make sure that we kept that on our side, that element of the surprise, like against Fnatic and stuff like that. It's like, if you want to beat us, you're going to have to lose. In order to learn to beat us, you're going to have to lose to us first. And I felt like that was part of the strength of that composition, is it was kind of annoying as hell to play. And then other teams who tried to copy us never understood what and why. Because when you copy people, you're just thinking about the what. Like, what's going on? You're not thinking about the why. why we have these walls this way, why we do what we do, why we made this composition. You're just kind of guessing at this point. And I think that that's what gave us an advantage over every team, especially when they started copying us on some of these compositions. It was very rare for us to lose a mirror comp match like that because we knew the strengths of those compositions more than the other team.
That had to have been a big gamble then, because if everyone remembers, they might not remember this detail, but when you guys went to Champions, you got like the fucking Uber Giga group of death, where like every single team there, it's like a playoff team, it's like DRX, Team Liquid, where everyone knows they were like supposed to be a super team, and you're obviously fucking Na'Vi, like one of the best European. This is a tough just group to get out of, mate.
On paper it is, but to me it wasn't, because DRX are the group monsters. Like, you're going to lose to them. They're going to make it out of group. We just chalk that one up.
Right.
Playing against two European teams, I was extremely confident because we kept three core players from last year, from the year prior. And one of my biggest focuses was that year in 2022 was explaining to them how to play against that slow style of play, like against Leviathan, the old Leviathan. It was like this super slow default. It was just like boring CS style. It's like, man, you guys are getting too desperate. Like, you feel like you need to push people who are holding. You don't need to do that. You need to play more of this, like, hiding in bomb sites, holding on to your Molly. Like, think of CSGO. It's like, imagine if you're taking Inferno and you have a Molly. Like, what's more stronger, a Molly with 10 seconds left or a Molly with 30 seconds left? It's like, you have to understand that your abilities get stronger as time goes by. If they're not giving you space, you don't give them space back. Why are you going to push someone who's holding a spot? Things like that. So there's a lot of things that kind of break down into the concepts of CS that applied really heavily to Valorant, and all those things were the exact things that you need to do to beat the European teams. Because this is not like me talking crap, it's just I feel like a lot of the European teams in Valorant are playing CS, they're not playing Valorant, and now they're playing Valorant. Now Koi, now Carmine Corp, now they're starting to play Valorant. Different agents, combining abilities, doing all this crazy shit. It's like, I felt like last year the theme of EMEA was CS, and it's like, we're playing Valorant, baby. Like, yeah, I respect CS. I love CS. I still watch it to this day, and I get a lot of inspiration from CS. But I'm playing Valorant now, and I think that I kind of had that mindset of like days that we talked about earlier. It's like everyone in Europe was just kind of playing that style, and it's super easily countered. But it's not like I have some sort of secret to beat this style.
Right.
It's just very. It's kind of, and the things that the comparisons I brought about the abilities and the mollies and the timing and like Sova ults, you know, things like that. It's like, all these elements, like, everyone understands this. If everyone understands it, I mean, it's not like some sort of secret. And I think that now teams are starting to understand. And when you're seeing teams like Fnatic struggle in that sense, is because I think that they need to really rework the way that they view the game and how they play it, and maybe forget some of those fundamentals a little bit and start getting a little bit more crazy, so they can embrace the craziness that this game brings, and then kind of lean back on those fundamentals rather than have that be like the forefront.
A cool theme of this tournament was obviously through the year, Fnatic was the number one team, weren't they? And they were the ones who beat you in lock-in. And you got to actually beat them twice in this tournament and make them basically have one of their worst placings. That must have been a nice, like, revenge match, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were dreaming of that rematch from ever since lock-in. They're probably just, you know, they're busy winning everything, and we're busy dreaming about them to beat them. So, like, it could not have come any sooner, that rematch. And just quite frankly, like, it wasn't like we did like some, like, when you're watching the game, you're like, damn, Loud really anti-stratted the hell out of them. And we did. But it was so easy to do. It wasn't like, you know, I wasn't like theory crafting. Like, when we're talking about how to beat Optic, like, and FNS, like, you're thinking about the counter to the counter. Like, what is Chet and FNS thinking? Then how, like, when they're watching me, what are they thinking? How am I going to think about what they think? All this stuff. Like, it's a big thing, right? Fnatic is just like, these guys have won everything. They've not changed one single strategy, one single composition, one single anything. So, done. Like, whether I watch a VOD from yesterday or I watch a VOD from a year ago, it's all the same. So, for me, it was very easy to break down what to do and how to beat it. And, yeah, it kind of paid off, and we ended up smashing them. Like, we didn't just beat them. We beat the crap out of them. And I think that that kind of let them know that like, we were just on different levels. You know, I think we proved that we were the better team that year, regardless of how they finished, the kind of way that we played those games. We proved we were the better team, and the placings kind of were like a merit to the work throughout the whole entire year. Because, yeah, we had a crappy run in Tokyo, but other than that, we were pretty dominant the season, and everyone knew that we should have won lock-in. So
you know, we let that one slip from us, and it is what it is. I think everyone will be no one will ever forget that. But at the same time, it felt damn good beating them and eliminating them from champion.
Right. If you don't like the European CS style, Paper Rex is obviously completely the opposite, right? This is the dude. I've watched a lot of teams in a lot of games. This is one of the craziest TAC FPS teams I've ever seen. Like, that style's ridiculous. And this match you played against them was fucking epic. Like, this could also have gone both ways. Give me some thoughts on this game.
Oh man, those guys are wild, man. And Alex is a pretty cool guy. Their coach, he told me, like, he shared with me in Tokyo that he had downloaded my guide a long time ago.
All right, like, that's cool.
One, and he still kind of like reads it and talks about it to the guys and stuff. So I'm like, man, you're at least preaching fundamentals for the most part, because I know that, like, I was preaching fundamentals a lot in that guide, but at the same time, you're preaching how to, like, test limits, and I think that that's something that that team is extremely good at, is that they understand what it's like to push boundaries, and their talent. They also have players that are flexible enough to play a little bit of everything.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, they can do whatever. I think that that's where someone like Alex can really start making magic happen, because at that point, you're just creating the meta somewhere new. Obviously, they were going to take a big hit when Jing left, because his raise is out of this world. You know, normally when you're playing against a Jett, you have to deal with a flying character. It's like, damn it, what the hell's going on here, right? When you're playing against Jing, that Jett is flying. So it's like, it's annoying as shit to play against. He's always got like some sort of shotgun or shorty or something that it's like he's trying to get in your face. So you have to really respect spacing a lot. And the problem is that they're suffocating, because while he's doing what he's doing, then they have something who's just an absurd aggressive player. Then you have Divide doing his thing. You have everyone just – doesn't matter what agent they play. They're in your face. And when you have guys like Jing and something that it's second nature for them to jump and get in people's faces, I mean, all the other guys got to do is trade. And I think Alex does a really good job of controlling those guys, in the sense of, like, you can teach them how to, like, they can play Valorant and start dominating at that game, but he's always going to fall back on the fundamentals in some way. So I've always have so much respect for them. DSN, he's there, huh? Harley. So I've seen him at a couple tournaments.
Oh, that's cool.
It's been really, really cool to see him at some of these tournaments. Just, you know, sharing some ideas. Super nice guy. The only guy I don't miss seeing is Karn. You know, I think he still hates me to this day.
Because of the stupid thing at Real World Wii Sports Masters show. Okay.
But hey, he got eliminated, so.
True. They didn't reverse it. See, that
I mean, my biggest advocate was Tommy, and Tommy would never have advocated for me.
No, that's true. I did always tell them, come on, mate. He wouldn't lie. Like, Lopez doesn't lie on that, mate. Come on.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, the owner of DRX cleared me and everything like that.
Yeah,
and
true.
Karn's still butthurt 12 years later. You know, but that's why when, you know, we eliminated him from champs, I gave him like a C.
All right. Fuck me, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People were wondering, like, oh my God, Fraud, is he going to ever go to Fnatic? Like, we would love to see him on this team. Right. Like, all the Fnatic fanboys. I'm like, you guys have no idea how petty this guy is that is running your org. So it is what it is. It'll never happen.
Right. One thing I want to ask is this. Obviously, the annoying thing was, even though, like, the two best teams from the Americas, it turns out, was EG and Loud, you only met basically in the slow bracket. Like, it took all that time because obviously they were on the different side at the other tournament before. When you did meet, though, I know now they won, they get to, like, talk mad shit. Like, this is another series, mate, where this is winnable too. This is it's an epic series, but it's winnable, right? This is like a heavyweight boxing match. People just taking the biggest shot of the other person and keep it going. Give me some thoughts on this match.
It's just tough, man. Like, Ethan is like a very good player. Like, he just understands the game and fundamentals. It was easy. We found some tendencies to able to counter him on Pearl, but that was it. He's just very dynamic. It's hard to do that to a guy. And he was easily countered on Pearl because he was playing Yoru and it was like he only had a couple moves, right? But he's just so dynamic. Then you got a guy like Demon One. I mean, I don't know exactly what it's like to be on his team, you know, so I can't really rate how he is compared to, say, like Aspas and EA guys I've known for a little while personally. But face value, one of the most insane players. I call him the king of one taps. Like, not like scream kind of that, but like every single time you're watching him play, he's just one bullet. The other day when he played Loud, he's blind, still gets one shots. It's like, Jesus, man. I have not seen a guy like Demon One until Aspas, and even then, it's kind of like they're both so unique and bizarre and freakish in their own way. It's unreal. So I think that, you know, while everyone on their team, even Giacomo's a guy who is extremely talented, can play any agent, and I thought was kind of their most underrated player. I think everyone started realizing the talent that he had towards the end of Champions, but because everyone kind of gave Demon One like all the praise and, you know, much deserved. The kid was insane, but I think Giacomo was one of their hidden gems. Even Potter, you know, we felt like a lot of times when we played against CG, there was that little element of anti-stretting that went on. We, you know, obviously every team is watching our VODs and trying to get some sort of game plan for us, but I felt like EG had a good way of showing their game plan and having it be different and also changing it at the drop of a dime. So, you know, maybe if we were beating the crap out of them, they can easily just change to maybe a different style. And, you know, I felt like tactically they were on our level, if not, you know, just as good. Maybe like map pool and composition wise, we probably had the edge on that. But at the same time, they didn't let us get to our maps. They didn't let us, you know, even on our maps, they can still take us out. And while we were focused on trying to change comps and try and do different things, they were focused on just beating the crap out of us and fine tuning their details. So I think how they were approaching their day to day towards the end was what allowed them to have so much more success than us, because we were in our own heads for a small bit until we were able to get out of it. And once we kind of we had a tougher time in the group than we thought we would have, and I think a lot of it was due to the fact that we were kind of playing some off meta stuff, some weird comps on Ascent and Pearl and this and that, and we won based on our concepts, understanding how the other team plays. And I was just crying in the background the whole time, like, please go back to Auto comps, please, please, please. I felt like I was getting annoying as shit, you know. But me and Aspas were finally able to get our way and go back to our old comps, and I felt like that really helped us throughout that group stage, throughout the bracket stage. And that also was why I think that we were able to have such close games like Paper X and EG, is because of, you know, those comps. I mean, we 13-0'd EG on that comp. We beat them against their Yoru on that comp, in the Harbor Viper, which, you know, we had, like, EG hadn't lost a Pearl, and we were doing nothing but losing Pearls because we were trying to play with Breach and different things. We go back and we just dominate them again. So it's kind of like, you know, we had a system, and I wish we kind of kept that the whole entire year. But at the same time, I would be a hypocrite if I did not want to test, because that is part of what I like to do, testing and innovating. I just felt like our timing was off. I felt like we didn't have that gap or that setting in Tokyo to make what we wanted to do happen. And then through our time in preparation for champs, I felt like we had a decent amount of time, but not enough, but enough to, like, maybe, you know, test out whatever. And it really ended up costing us, just made our group run a little bit more difficult.
If people don't know, Potter actually is almost as old school as us, basically. She was there right back in 1.6, and she was actually one of the female players who could play with the men, and actually I think even was on probably some mixed teams at like local lands and stuff. So I've known her for a long, long time. Obviously, as you say, the cool thing was, even in CSGO, you guys actually were in the same area, you hung out, etc. It must be kind of surreal to be like coaching against each other now in a totally different game on these massive stages, right?
Yeah. It's like that little extra element of, like, respect. It's like every single time we went on stage with each other, she always wanted to do like a different handshake or something.
Right.
Like that. It was like just to, like, show the world that we're not just enemies in a sense, you know. Just like, hey, we're friends here too. And I owe her so much. I mean, just even something little like when I moved back to Miami and I shipped my car home and my lease ran up.
She drove it or something, didn't she? Or something mad like that?
No. I shipped it back to Florida, car. But she ended up letting me stay at her house, her apartment with Moses, for a couple of days while I, you know, turned in my keys. And before I took my flight home, she was very helpful like that. Her and Moses welcomed me in, took care of me. It was a pretty dark time in my life there because I was transitioning out of gaming and also transitioning my life to move back to Florida after being gone for 7-8 years and going into the banking world. So it was a quite an interesting period of my life, and you know, I'll never forget and can't thank those people enough for being there for me during those times. And that's why for me, my relationship with Potter is always going to be fantastic. She could do no wrong in my eyes, you know. And seeing her have that kind of success, seeing her win champions and being hailed as one of the best. I mean, if it wasn't for her, I probably would have been one of the top coaches last year. So it's kind of like, if I'm going to lose to anyone, I'm so happy it was her in a way, you know?
By the way, obviously, the obvious question I should ask, and I'll do it without pretending I've seen anything on the internet. How does Frod not stay in Loud? Why is he not in Loud right now? What would happen? I mean, if you look at this year, yeah, there's the one failure at the Tokyo event. And even then, like I said, actually, by the way, one of those teams went to the finals. Like, that's it. Aside from that, what else do they want? Like, you had a second, you had a fourth, a third. Like, these are good. These probably dominated your own region. Like, why was Frod not in Loud? What happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess what was said out there is our cultures are different and my language isn't so great, but I disagree with that. But that's okay. I mean, nothing's ever going to be perfect there. You know, I would, like I said earlier, I don't think there's a single Brazilian person that has spoken with me that has said that they don't understand me. They understand everything I say. And when you go to a Cuban restaurant, you're going to order white rice and black beans with meat. When you go to a restaurant in Sao Paulo, you're going to get white rice, beans, and meat. Like, our cultures are very similar. So, you know, it is what it is. Maybe just a different way they're looking to go. But it's no problem. I don't, you know, people can just assume what they want, but just know that what's said out there is not the truth, you know? Like, if the culture was so different, if my language was so bad, I wouldn't be on the team I'm on now, right? So, I feel confident in being able to speak the language and be able to express myself. Maybe early on when I was speaking Portuguese, I was maybe a little bit more direct because I'm not able to elaborate and have that sort of day-to-day convo. So, you know, people would think that maybe I'm direct or I'm an asshole or something like that, but that's just people not taking the chance to know me, not to take the chance, like, guy speaking like his third language, we need to give him a little bit of slack or like give him a little bit of time, whatever. But it's okay. You live and you learn. And, you know, like I said, I've been through so much. I understand that kids are going to be kids. So I don't hold any ill will or animosity towards it. I just, you know, always have to explain or defend myself in the case of like, yeah, I speak the language. Our cultures are very similar. So whatever is out there, don't necessarily believe all that. And at the same time, I have nothing but respect and love for those guys, like the organization as well as the staff, the owners. They've treated me so kindly, the fans, everybody, that you never know. But at the same time, for now, it's not possible, you know.
Obviously, you mentioned earlier you had this connection to Pazuka as the guy who is obviously now the coach in MIBR. Was it obvious to just go over to there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like me and Pazuka work very well together, and he's someone that respects me like that too. So he understands where I come from in some of these things. Like, we have conversations, so he can talk to me very firmly, and he can also be a friend of mine. And for me, someone like that, I need that, and we all need that, because we don't need yes men around us all the time. And I think that that's where me and him are on the same page, because whatever he's good at, he focuses on, and whatever I'm good at, I focus on, and we kind of balance each other out. Because in this business, like, there's so much stuff that goes on. You know, obviously back in the day there was no coaches. Now you can use multiple. We balance each other out, and that's probably one of the best things that we have. And I'm able to just be myself. I don't have to hide who I am or change who I am. I could be myself, and as I feel like throughout my whole professional career, what it brought me success was being able to be myself. I feel like that's only going to happen more now as a coach, because I'm able to be myself. I don't have to change who I am. I could do what I feel like is best, and my opinion is going to be respected. It doesn't have to be 1,000% listened to every moment, but it's going to be heard. And I think the biggest strength of what we have going on in this team is our culture and our climate as a team. And, you know, I would say that all the players, as well as me and Pazuka, have a major part in how that goes. And there's so many things that, like, you know, Pazuka, he has like a weekly team bonding day kind of thing. It's like team bonding stuff we do. And I've never done that before, because I didn't have teams that needed that, I guess. We kind of just found our way to do that on our own. But the way that we approach some of these things now, we have a way that we can kind of make this family atmosphere without it being forced. And we're all sacrificing a lot to be where we are right now. So I think that through our shared sacrifices, we come closer together as a team based on our experiences and also how we operate day to day. I mean, we practice 6 days a week. We practice from, we get around 11 a.m. to about 7 or 8 p.m. Like, this team works their ass off, and I would say probably more than any other team I've been a part of. I mean, even in complexity, we worked our asses off, but we probably play like maybe 5 or 6 scrims a day. Here, we don't play as, we play like 4, as well as a lot of VOD reviews, tactics, things like that. But our body of work is a lot, and we also do it 6 days a week, whereas with complexity, it was usually the 5 days, and individual work on the other couple of days. So we're busting our asses here, and I think a lot of that comes like top down. You know, because a lot of these players, they need that kind of guidance. And guys like me and Bazooka, who are workaholics and are really passionate and dedicated to the game, our efforts are able to trickle down. And, you know, hopefully the guys kind of learn a little bit about some of that.
In the kickoff tournament, I feel like because people know you weren't in the playoffs, actually this run gets a bit slept on, mate, because it was obviously a very unusual format. So it started with a normal GSL group, but there was only 3. And so then they made it so the winner of that went into the semis, but there's one spot left. And then the problem is the play-in is just like a round robin. And so bizarrely, even though you lost the game, by the way, to the team that won the tournament, Sentinels, even though you then beat G2... then cause G2 beat Sentinels, but Sentinels got a map, they got to go through as the fourth team. And it's like, what's weird about that is it's weird to lose a tournament where it's sort of like, yeah, but I won my last game. Like, what? It's
no, so, I know.
I feel like people that slept on that run a little bit, right?
Yeah, and then I tweeted out that, you know, what a run. We got 5th place. We actually got 6th place.
Right.
It's like how the hell did we beat G2? How the hell did they place above us?
True.
Okay, whatever. You know, I'll accept that. My bad. You know, we got 6th place, not 5th place. But yeah, like our run was freaking good. Like we got our revenge on Cloud9. We beat them really nicely. We wiped the floor with Fury on those games. And then when we got into that round robin group, it was tough, man. Sentinels is just on a heater right now. Those guys are dominating. Great staff, great players. This change with getting Zelsus in has really given them that jolt of life that they probably needed. And we played them close. I mean, even though we kind of got whooped, I felt like the score was a little bit more deceptive. And maybe also we felt like we weren't fully in the game yet. We were exhausted. We had just finished playing the night before. We had to prepare for 2 teams. I remember me and Bazooka, we sit up to like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, or at least my time. I was feeding my baby. And we were watching VODs at the same time because I was still in Florida at the time. So we were just trying to do everything we can. So we felt extremely confident going into that round robin group. We're like, we're going to win this thing. You know, our biggest hurdle is going to be Sentinels. And it's not because we passed up on G2 or anything like that. We were just confident against them. We did our work. We practiced really hard. It's just we're just here like reaping the rewards of our day-to-day efforts right now. And it just comes through. You know, working hard. Like, there's not a team that's working as hard as us like that. So, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of teams putting in work and stuff, but we're really grinding here. So, I think a lot of people are sleeping on us because they just think that, you know, whatever happened last year, the results last year, it's like, it's a different team, man. Just because you kept a couple of the same players, because you kept the same coach, doesn't mean that the approach is going to be the same. And I think that we went from a team that people thought we were like a guaranteed last place to a holy shit, these guys are probably one of the most underrated teams in this franchise. And this is not going to be a free week, a free game when we play these guys.
What is the big thing that you're, I use someone where now, is it just like the day to day? Like it's my job. It's what I do. Do you have like a big goal? Like, for example, is the dream to win champions yourself? Is this the big thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I kind of technically feel like I did, even though I wasn't like so formal, in 2022. Yeah. Like I want to win trophies, man. Like that's just my deal. I don't care if it's champions. I don't care if it's masters. I don't care if it's Americas, because, you know, I'm old school in the sense of like back in the day, if you couldn't win in your state, you couldn't go to the U.S. qualifier. If you couldn't go to the U.S. qualifier, you couldn't make it to the major. So it's like step by step, right? Like I want to win the trophy here in America. Then I want to qualify to go to Tokyo or Shanghai or wherever Masters is at. I want to win that shit. Then I want to use that success to qualify to champions and then win that shit too. Like it's, you know, people have to understand that if you, like I said, like what I said earlier, if you win one time, it's kind of like a fluke. If you can win multiple times, you have something, and it becomes like addicting pursuing that trophy. And the worst part about that addiction is that every time you find success, you immediately forget about it. It just becomes such short-term memory that you're like, fuck, I wish I could relive that moment again. You're like, well, I can't go back in time. The only way is to find another one. So that's why for me, I was able to kind of get a lot of those deja vu moments last year. Like when we won the champions, I wasn't there, but I was able to kind of feel it in my soul. Lock in, I was like, fuck, you know, it was right there for us. We got second place. Then when America's made me feel really, really good. And then champions, like getting a top three finish, it's just a damn tease, you know? It's like for me, I just like, we didn't like, it doesn't matter what MIBR placed last year. Our goal is to qualify to champions and win champions. Whether we get there or not, like reach for the stars, settle for the moon or whatever the hell that saying is called, you know? Like we're gonna do our best to get out there. And if we, you know, can't make it to the mountaintop, we'll at least be somewhere where we can be proud of that we tried to accomplish that, and maybe it's top three, top five, but whatever. We're gonna aim for the best, and we'll settle for wherever we end up at the end of the day.
If people think in CS, the zenith of your career was obviously the team pre-CGS, which was like one of the best in the world. It won majors. It was beating even European teams and going head-to-head with all the legends of the day, all those people in the frag movies. But after that, you had a lot of hard times. Like you had the time after CGS where you came back to 1.6 and all the European teams were sort of like, ha ha ha, they're behind us, you know, and you didn't have time to catch up. Then in CSGO, like you say, you tried to do the comeback. You didn't have ideal circumstances. You kind of didn't even get much of a chance. Then you obviously had the whole period where you were the T1 Valorant coach, and then the perception was like, ah, maybe he's just not a good coach, or you know, he's being booted out, you're out in the wilderness again. Do you feel like, has this been like a redemption arc for you?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's like a theme of my life. Like my favorite part is when I left T1, they got that guy who was cheating saying help sewers, and I think in their announcement post they said like we've got an upgrade. And then even some of the community members were like, you can't upgrade from fraud. Like, no disrespect to this other guy, but like, this guy's a psychologist for a League of Legends team. Like, ain't no shot this guy's even on the same page. So it's kind of twofold. For me, it is like, the setbacks in life, it's all about the bounce back. So for me, I don't give a shit about what happens. I could get cut tomorrow. I'm going to find my way. Like a nuclear rat. I'm not dying. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I've learned to channel those setbacks into motivations rather than, like, they've always been part of my motivation, but maybe, like, even the stuff that happened with the complexity, it kind of set me back mentally and personally for a little while because I didn't forgive situations when we all should be a little bit more forgiving in life. So I think that as long as we, like, was it like a wise man never stops learning or something like that? There's like that one saying. So it's kind of like my mindset is I always want to find some sort of lesson in life. And if, you know, there are some setbacks that happen, sometimes it's my fault. Sometimes it's no fault of my own. You can still find some sort of way to bounce back and learn. And all these setbacks that have happened in my life have been, you know, part of the process. I'm a big believer in faith and big believer in myself and the power that, you know, I can potentially have and this and that. So I'm going to work my ass off. My family, they're immigrants. They came with this mindset to work hard, work hard, work hard. And that's why I say that regardless of if I'm in gaming, coaching, playing, or in a different job, like I work hard. I don't think that you'll find any boss of mine or any teammate of mine that'll tell me that Danny's a slacker. They can say whatever they want about me, but they'll never say that I, you know, don't work my ass off. So I think that is, you know, that's part of what everyone should have a little bit about. And, you know, sometimes when you get those setbacks in life, like even someone like you seeing someone like myself, or you're saying like what you said, like I had a great career as a player and this and that, like it was full of setbacks. I had personal issues where my family did not want me to compete. I had to move out of my house when I was 18 years old, you know, so much setbacks, so much sacrifices, that ends up, you know, maybe sacrificing, like maybe I you know, like I'm 37. I just had my first kid, you know, things like that. It's like maybe some sacrifices in life you have to make. But as long as, you know, you work hard, I feel like everything is going to be okay. And if it doesn't work out in gaming, it'll work out somewhere else, and I'll go work hard there too. So I think it's more of like a mindset and my day-to-day approach that has allowed me. And it's kind of like I really appreciate my parents for instilling a lot of that discipline in me and that work ethic.
At the end of this interview, do you have a final message? Is there anyone you want to say hello or thank you to?
Yeah, I just give a big shout out to you, to my family, to MIBR, my players, the staff. Everyone here is amazing. You know, I appreciate everyone for welcoming me with open arms. I want to give a big shout out to, what is it, your enemies, like the Brazilian fans, okay. You know? It's like,
sure.
They might be your enemies, but they're my homies, you know? So big shout out to you guys. Love you guys. Appreciate all the support. And, you know, it's meant a lot for someone like myself that has gone through some of these things and these sacrifices to be welcomed in. Like y'all have welcomed me in. It's meant the world to me. You know, I'm an old ass guy. So, you know, we kind of experience different things as days go. And the experiences that I've been going through these last several years have been nothing but amazing. And I can't thank the people around me enough. You know, guys like the organizations like Loud, like MIBR, guys like Bazooka, who gave me a chance at Loud a couple years ago when no one else would. You know, there's a lot of people out there that I'm where I'm at now because of their help, and I'm forever grateful for that. And the only way I could repay it is know you have a friend for life and also someone who's going to bust their ass for you.
In this esports world, it can seem like everyone's against you, but I've always got the Skrilluminati, my Patreon community, riding with me. And it is thanks to the support of the following people, this video and all of them on my channel are made possible. Matt Pugnacho Rakula, Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Tosh, Jensen Gore, Animosity, Toucan, Tobias Bernasconi. If you've ever watched my videos, you know now I'm going to give a massive shout out to Jerky's Minion, the main man. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? You want teasers? Find out who the upcoming interview guests are. Maybe you want to ask me a question. I tend to answer them at length in my video AMA. Do you want to take part in one of those dinner discussions where we talk about what you're interested in esports? Well, if any of these perks or more appeal to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today. Where? In the description box below is a Patreon link.